I wonder how many of us here are guilty of liking the idea of forgiveness better than the reality. I think you know what I'm talking about. I think I sure am. I mean, the other day, I had a LinkedIn request from someone who I thought I had forgiven years ago, and I saw this LinkedIn request, and my mood went dark. And I realized forgiveness is complex, isn't it? It's a complex thing. I thought I had forgiven him. Forgiveness is hard, it's painful, it's messy, and it is so not easy. A while ago, a man I had spent a lot of time with confessed something to me. He had done something that was very costly and hurtful to another person, then harmed another person. And he was offered forgiveness despite all he had done. It was incredible he had been offered this forgiveness despite all the pain he'd caused. It was amazing. But the more I talked to him, the more I realized that he never accepted the forgiveness. He actually didn't even want it. And I know that sounds crazy, doesn't it? It sounds kind of strange that someone wouldn't want it, but we are complex. He didn't accept it, and I'm not really sure why, but here's what I think. In my conversations with him, my best guess is that he didn't take responsibility for what he had done. He was non-repentant, and actually what he wanted was to simply avoid the consequences of what he had done, which is a different thing. True repentance is not about avoiding consequences. It's about accepting responsibility. True forgiveness is about releasing and being released. It's about freedom. And did you know that forgiveness is at the heart of who God is and what God does? It's a central part of who he is and his demand on our lives. It's why Jesus had hard and sobering words for people who weren't able to forgive others. People who were forgiven but refused to forgive others. We need to be a people of forgiveness. So forgiveness is hard. Make no mistake about that. It's one thing to like the concept. It's another thing to live by forgiveness. Forgiveness is harder to do than it is to agree with. And it's not just hard to forgive people. It's hard to accept forgiveness as well. It's hard to forgive people because the anger sometimes feels good. It feels righteous. It's fire. It's a fuel that can keep us going. But like fire, unforgiveness is dangerous. It can burn you. It can consume. Today is the second in our talkback series where we want to talk about what we often think about but don't often talk about. And we want to make public what we keep private. And in this series, we are going to be having guests and we're going to be asking them questions and interview them. And today we have two guests, Jack and Sam, that I will be interviewing a bit later, about their experience of forgiveness. And the reason that they are uniquely qualified, the reason they are guests today, is that they can speak on forgiveness because of what they have been through in life. Both Jack and Sam have spent time in prison and have had to grapple with forgiveness. And I think we can learn a lot from these two courageous men who are willing to risk so much by coming up on the stage and make themselves vulnerable. And I just want to acknowledge that and ask that we respect that vulnerability today. The Apostle Paul in the book of Romans deals a lot with forgiveness, especially in the context of condemnation and righteousness. The book deals with some really big questions. And one of the biggest is, what does it mean to be part of this new people that God is creating? Who belongs? Who do we belong to? We're looking at a couple of verses in chapter 4 today, and Paul is really working through the movement of God to include, not exclude, to bring into his family, his people, this movement to create a nation, a people for his name. And it shouldn't surprise us that he talks a lot about Abraham, because Abraham is this important figure for the Jews. And Abraham, if you remember, had this experience with God way back in Genesis chapter 12. And it's where we see God creating a people for his name through Abraham. He tells Abraham that he will bless him, and that he, Abraham, will be a blessing, and that through him, the whole world will be blessed. And the thing is, though, God's people kept missing with this idea of blessing. They thought it was some right, some privilege, some status thing that they could keep for themselves and keep everyone else out. So we have the Apostle Paul here grappling with this, clearing it up, and he's saying, you know what? From the very beginning, this blessing thing, this peoplehood thing, it was about including and reaching. It was about creating a people for God's name that includes everyone, not just Jews. And if you are blessed by God, you will be a blessing to others. And if you aren't worried about that, if you don't care, you are way off base and you don't know what it means to be righteous and blessed and forgiven. So we pick up today in Romans chapter 4. I'm going to look at verses 6 to 8. David says the same thing when he speaks of the blessedness of the one to whom God credits righteousness apart from works. Blessed are those whose transgressions are forgiven, whose sins are covered. Blessed is the one whose sin the Lord will never count against them. Those who are blessed, those who are blessed, they are forgiven. And those who are forgiven, they are blessed. Forgiveness is at the heart of who God is and what he does. I think it's really interesting that he should refer back to David, isn't it? Because if there was one man in the Bible who was in need of forgiveness, who had fallen, who had sinned, who had hurt people, it was David. Mighty David, the king, the warrior, the poet, the one who defeated Goliath the Philistine, the one who dealt with the abusive and crazy King Saul in such a godly manner, the same one. He knows about forgiveness. He was the one who was overcome by lust. The same one who knew no restraint. He was the one who was overcome by envy. You remember he wanted another man's wife? This man, David, who had many wives and a harem of women, as kings of old did, wanted the wife of another man who had one wife. And he wanted her so badly that his desire for her consumed him completely. The desire filled his mind. It tainted him. He wanted her so badly that he murdered that man and took the man's wife as his own. This is the one, David, who Paul refers back to. This is the one, David, who Paul uses to illustrate blessing and forgiveness. It's interesting that Paul would choose David as an example. Paul also was a man who had hurt many people, a man who had put people in prison, and was, before he met Jesus, a man of bondage, not freedom. So Paul knows what he's talking about with forgiveness, because he had personally persecuted many, many Christians. He knows what he's talking about. And in this chapter, when he's talking about freedom and faith and blessing, And who is included in this wonderful, expansive gospel message of freedom, ushered in by the life and death and resurrection of Jesus Christ? He looks back and includes a nod to the adulterer, murderer, king, King David, as his scriptural reference for forgiveness. Now remember what Paul is doing here. Romans would have been like a sermon to the first people hearing it. His word wasn't gospel yet. It was a letter. It was a sermon to a congregation. And he uses as his scripture for this sermon, as his authority, an excerpt from Psalm 32, a psalm of David, where David laments and expresses suffering and pain caused by his sins, which were many. This was a man racked with pain, experience, and emotional and felt about what he had done. Look what he says about forgiveness later in the psalm. Then I acknowledged my sin to you and did not cover up my iniquity. I said, I will confess my transgressions to the Lord, and you forgave the guilt of my sin. You know why Paul, a man who had himself been forgiven much, you know why he refers back to King David? Because there is hope for all of us, the worst of us. There's hope. Forgiveness is for everyone. The good, the bad, the good looking, the not so good looking. It's for everyone. That's why he refers back to David, because there's hope. That is the heart of the gospel. It's a gospel about forgiveness and freedom. Forgiveness is at the heart of who God is and what he does. We, as God's people, his church, are to be a people of forgiveness who express this new way of being. You know, that man I was talking about, sadly, he never did come to accept responsibility for what he'd done. And because of that, he couldn't accept forgiveness. And you know, often when we think we bury these things deeply and no one can see, they leak out in ways that are evident that we're hiding something. Because what became a theme in this man's life was his guilt. He couldn't look anyone in the eye. He was suspicious of everyone else because he knew he needed to be suspected. That's what happens with lack of forgiveness. It's a sad story, really. And I'm hoping today that as we journey through this, that we won't let this happen. This isn't God's best for us. Forgiveness is at the heart of who God is and what he does. So now we are going to talk about forgiveness and with our guests who have profound experience with it. And you know what time it is, FBC? It's time for Talk Back. Thank you, guys. So great to have roadies in a band. So I'd like to invite Sam and Jack up, and would you give them an applause as they come up? Thanks for doing this. And if we could just grab that mic. So I just want to make it clear that you don't have to answer every question, but you both can if you want to, okay? So I just want to ask you first some general questions about your experience. Can you tell us about how it felt to be convicted and sentenced and where you were emotionally when that happened?
Oh, darn, I thought you were going to go first. Well, first of all, I was definitely removed from my situation because I was arrested and then incarcerated, and then the sentencing happened after that. So I kind of felt separated or segregated, and then when I went back to court to get sentencing, the court was basically empty, the lower part, and then the gallery, which is the area around the court where the public can sit, was completely full. So it was kind of, I couldn't even look up at the gallery, so I felt very ashamed. I felt very full of guilt. From the arrest until the sentencing was a period of about 7 months. So being removed from my situation for 7 months, being kind of put in a different situation, completely foreign to me, which was prison, and then being put back into the community, so to say, in the courtroom, was very what's the word for it? Like accusatory, right? I felt the burden of everybody looking at me. And the turn for me was when my mom stood up after the sentencing, and she kind of, in front of the whole court, said, you know, by the way, Sam, we still love you, and it's always hard to air your dirty laundry. And just the comment, the way she said it, was so plain. And I was like, oh, yeah, okay, that's kind of what I'm feeling. But, of course, for the whole time of sentencing, it was, I had this burden put on me, right? And the only time I really cried was after that sentence in the cells underneath the court when I was put there alone while I was waiting for transfer to go back to prison again. That's when I cried, and I didn't cry after that. The whole time I spent 7 years in prison, and it was just survival after that, right? Okay. And what kind of came to my mind down there was, well, you're only crying because you got caught.
Right.
That's kind of so the full.
You put that on yourself.
Yeah, the full thing of my sin was my fault, and that's what stopped me crying, and that's what got me through, you know,
right.
The prison thing, because you know, all that shame and that guilt was kind of shoved down, like, well, I just have to survive now, so we'll deal with that later, right?
Okay.
So yeah, what I felt was separated and condemned. That's how I felt.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah.
For me, it was actually a totally different situation. And when I was charged, I was out on bail. So I was still in the community. And I felt like all eyes were on me. And felt the guilt and the shame of being convicted. And in my sentencing, for me was, I felt the judge was laying out the sentence, and the way he was doing it, it was like that I'm just going to be out on probation. And at the end of it, he turned and basically sentenced me for 4 years. And at that point, I felt alone. And also when I was in the prison cell at the police station waiting to be transferred, again, I said, God, where are you? And that moment, I was totally alone. That was my feeling, was alone. And I couldn't shake that. And I remember the day very clearly because it was July 1st, and it was in the morning, and I was being put into the vehicle to be transferred to the provincial, and it was black. The skies were black. It was lightning, thunder. So that day was the darkest day. But again, it happened to me twice because I was out on an appeal, so I was out again for 8 months. And January 10th, again, darkest day, because I had to go back the second time. But again, I felt alone. And so that's basically loneliness.
Thank you. Well, you can hang on to that for a sec. So do either of you want to comment about what it was like in prison for those of us who maybe have no idea about that?
For me, it was not my experience of prison was what you see on TV. And so going into prison, that was my thoughts, was what I was going into. And some of it was sort of true, because the one question someone asked me while I was in holding at KRC was, and I was Kamloops prison, and someone asked me, did I bring anything in? And I had to say, well, what do you mean? He goes, well, did you bring any drugs or cigarettes? He goes, that's the only way you're going to survive in here. And so that was one of my experiences. And the other one was at RAC, which is in Abbotsford, which is where they assessed you. And the fellow that I was in with, we were on lockdown, and he threw a piece of garbage and missed the garbage can. And my personality is I'm the person that I'm going to go pick up that garbage and throw it in the garbage can. And at that moment, he looked at me and he says, you ever do that again, I'm going to kill you. Hmm. And that day was just horrendous, because I was scared. And those are my two experiences.
You had to learn a new way of interacting with people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sam, do you have a comment on that?
Sure. Well, for me, it was, I think I was more naive than anything else, because I didn't really experience anything from people like negative. My only thing that I guess along your lines, the fear of it, was when I sat down at the table to eat and I sat in somebody else's chair, and I didn't even know that it was that way, right? And so when I did that, he says, well, you're sitting in my chair. I was like, oh, I apologize, and then I left, right? And went to sit somewhere else. And then I kind of realized, okay, so things are a little different in here. And so I didn't realize until many years afterwards how I was being protected by God through that initial part, because I didn't really realize where I was and how dangerous of a place it was until later on,
right,
when people were saying, well, yeah, everybody knew that you were coming to this prison because they saw on the news, and they all, same thing, they all wanted to kill me, right? And I didn't know. I just walked onto the unit and just went about my daily thing. And I didn't hear about it until afterwards. So for me, the whole, probably I'd say half of my sentence, I was completely naive to the danger. But the danger was right there, and I had no clue. So that's kind of my experience, was just complete naivety.
That's interesting. It surprises me you don't speak about confinement or food or anything, just the fear and the relationship. That's the biggest thing.
Yeah.
Okay, so, you know, we talked a bit about how there's this relationship with forgiveness between being able to forgive yourself and forgive others, and how if we can't forgive ourselves, it's really hard to forgive other people. And I'm wondering, have you been able to forgive yourself? And what would you say you've learned about forgiveness through this process? And are there one of you or both can take that question?
Well, for me, it's a personal issue with forgiveness. I feel that a person can't forgive themselves, because then you could just do anything you wanted and you just forgive yourself all the time, right? So I have a problem with the term. I understand where the heart of the phrase comes from, to forgive yourself and then move on with life. But I think as Christians, we have a unique responsibility or a unique opportunity to be forgiven. And I think that is what I've learned through the whole process. And for me, it hasn't been, you know, it's probably been in the last couple of years where I've truly been able to receive that forgiveness from God. And it's not that God is withholding, it's that I'm not receiving.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, forgiving myself means receiving forgiveness from God.
Right.
And God has forgiven me. I understand that. Mm-hmm. And I can't just forgive myself, because then I could continue doing crime and continue, I'll just forgive myself. It's good enough. Good to go.
Sure.
But until I can realize what I'm doing is wrong, what I did was wrong, and to accept the forgiveness from God, and that can truly, I can walk in freedom then. And at a certain level, I don't think I can forgive myself for my crime. Like, I still hold on to those beliefs and those thoughts that what I did was wrong. And so for repentance to really become full in my heart and in my life, it's just time. The time in prison was just basically my life was on pause. So the full healing didn't happen until I came out of prison and then was able to deal with all the emotions and feelings of life and returning to life. That's when forgiveness took hold. So once I was able to get back into life, then the forgiveness for me was time in real life. And
so
that's...
It sounds like you are aligning forgiving yourself with accepting forgiveness and pointing out that's been a process for you.
Yeah, for sure.
Thank you. Jack, do you want to comment on that?
For me, it actually took the second time going back to prison to learn about forgiving myself and forgiving others, because forgiveness for me, for people that before going to prison, people going into prison, I said, well, they deserve to be in there. They belong in there. But it was when I started hanging around with the lifers, which are people that are basically in there for most of their life, I got to hear their stories. And I realized at that moment when they were sharing with me was that I could actually have been in that same situation of being a lifer, because any of us can be in that point where in a situation you can actually find yourself being charged. And I finally realized that they're human, and I learned how to forgive them after hearing their story. And so when I went back the second time, I was in my darkest day and realizing that God loves me and he's already forgiven me. And I was a person that thought he was perfect. And that I had a halo on the top of my head. And it took me back that second time to realize that God had to break me. And when he did that, I realized I had to take responsibility and also allow God to work through me.
Okay, I'm going to ask you guys maybe if you could comment about your journey back into society, and particularly the church, and how have you... or have you not experienced forgiveness and acceptance in the church?
For me, coming into society, I was supposed to go back to Cranbrook, where I originally came from, and ended up coming here, and actually staying in a halfway house, which is just a few houses up here. And so I started going through Bridges to New Life, which is an organization that helps men that or women that have been in the prison system or have been affected by it, and help them get back into society. And so I was starting to go to Evangel, and I was accepted, even though I came out of prison. And it wasn't until meeting Yvonne, and she started bringing me here, and everyone here accepted me. And so acceptance was always there for me. But I still had to learn to be able to accept myself, because it still was a struggle. knowing that I was in prison. So the shame was still on me, and I did not love myself. So the church accepted me, but I still had to figure that out.
Yeah, I mean, the church as a whole, I think, was definitely accepting of me. And I remember about a year or so of me being in society, I had to tell my testimony in front of the banquet, the Bridges banquet, and there were 300 people, and that was quite daunting for me to reveal my whole story in front of 300 strangers, basically. And what I experienced after that was acceptance and forgiveness and love. And at that point, I still couldn't receive it for myself because I wasn't receiving it from God yet, right? But it was a shock for me, definitely. The only unforgiveness that I have felt is from my own family. I've had family members that supported me in prison, and then when they realized that I was getting out on parole, then they withdrew their support, and they said, we would rather you spend more time in prison because we feel you haven't dealt with your core issues yet. And so they withdrew their support, and I still have a sister that won't speak to me, and that, that's hard to deal with, but, I mean, we just kind of move on. So I've kind of experienced both acceptance and non-acceptance for what they feel hasn't been done yet.
Okay. So, and if there's one thing you could share with us as a church about what you've learned about forgiveness, what would that be?
I think the biggest lesson for me is just time. You know, it's funny because when you go to prison, you do time. But doing time in prison was just life on hold, emotions on hold, healing on hold. Everything is just paused. And then you do your time. And then the true healing doesn't happen until you start interacting. And right from the very beginning, when I was pulled out of my situation and put into a foreign situation, that was probably the hardest thing to do in terms of healing. Because what really needed to happen was I needed to remain in the community and then deal with the backlash of all that to begin the healing, to recognize the damage that I had done.
Right.
But being removed from that situation and being put somewhere else, well, in this other place, I haven't done anything wrong. Right? I don't know any of these people, and we just carry on with life. Whereas the people that are hurting and the damage that's been done, they have to band together, and the community has to reset. But I'm just allowed to put my life on hold and do time.
Right.
And then when I'm put back in the community, then time spent in the community and revealing my testimony and days like this where I can share from the heart, that's when the healing begins. So for me, for 7 years, it's just been paused.
I'm glad we can be part of that.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.
And for me, it was Yvonne and her family showing me grace and love and mercy. I never knew that until I met Yvonne, and knowing what love really was and what a relationship really looked like. And so God took me out of a very ugly marriage that I had and put me into something wonderful. And it took me a long time to realize that God was looking after me right through the whole thing and showed me what love really looks like. And he did that through Yvonne and her family and through this church. So my takeaway was that God does forgive, and that there are people in society that do have that grace.
Well, thank you, guys. I really appreciate your vulnerability up here, your candidness, and I think you've taught us about forgiveness, and we will continue to journey with you and hopefully to be part of that forgiveness journey with you guys. So can we have a hand for these guys as we... Thank you very much. Okay. See you. So I'd like to call the roadies back up and the worship team after the roadies have their stuff moved out of the way. Just have a few concluding comments. Earlier in the service, we read Isaiah 61:1. The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is on me because the Lord has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim freedom for the captives and release from darkness for prisoners. Isn't that the heart of the Christian message? To proclaim good news to the poor in spirit, to the marginalized, to the oppressed, to the hurting. We proclaim the good news of freedom. That's what we do. We speak freedom. We act freedom. We encourage freedom. We forgive freely. That's the heart of the Christian message. We bind up the brokenhearted. We take their wounds and we bind them together. We stitch them up. We stop the bleeding. We forgive. That is the heart of the Christian message. And we're called to speak and proclaim and enact freedom with our actions and being and ministries and relationships. Speak freedom. We're called to release people from bondage. And that's what forgiveness is. It's at the heart of the gospel. Forgiveness is at the heart of who God is and what he does. And we are to be a people of forgiveness. And we've been forgiven. So let's worship.